Today's Locked On Grizzlies episode is brought to you by Built Bar, an absolutely delicious and tasty, but also super healthy protein bar. And you can get $10 off your first order by going to BuiltBar.com and putting in promo code Locked On.
Pull up jump shot. It's good. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. I'll be not flying solo tonight, but we'll be without regular co-host Mark King. He's got a busy week elsewhere, and so I will be kind of manning the station for early this week. But I am, again, not flying solo, and I'm very pleased to welcome Chris Manning. He covers the Grizzlies for Forbes, also does a lot of work with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Chris, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing good. It's good to break out of my weird little Cavs bubble. So thanks for having me on.
Well, we appreciate it. And I really was excited to get you on. First, haven't had the pleasure of speaking with you. Have read some of your work. Excellent work. You can find Chris. He's a very popular name. Of course, I go through Grizzly Bear Blues to SB Nation. Chris actually runs For the Sword, the Cavs SB Nation channel. He also does the Locked On Cavs podcast. Just a very talented writer and podcaster. So, Chris, it's a pleasure having you. But, Chris, I really wanted to bring you on tonight because, you know, you, from the perspective of being a Cavs fan and covering the Cavs, obviously things have kind of changed course over the past 2 years from where you were the previous four.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, we were talking about this before we started recording. I think if you want to just look at how teams have approached the last 2 years and how things can really change in 2 years, if you just look at the drafts the Cavs have had the last 2 years, I mean, they've had the volume of picks has been, I think, one higher first-round pick, but you know, Memphis comes away with three guys that are seemingly lock solid, you know, franchise cornerstones in Jaren, in Ja, and in Brandon Clark. And if you look at the Cavs, you know, it's Colin Sexton who's grown a lot and has kind of developed into the best guy of the four guys they've gotten, but we haven't seen Dylan Windler play. Kevin Porter Jr. is very young and, you know, he could go a number of different directions, but it's been encouraging. And Darius Garland is sort of this wild unknown. The 2 years, it's crazy that it feels like LeBron was for me 5 years ago at this point, but it's really been 2 years and it's been a weird 2 years.
It certainly has. And that's the crazy thing about the Grizzlies and the Cavs, you know, the Grizzlies going through the grit and grind era and then struggling for a few years, you know, of course the Cavs with LeBron coming back, being at the, you know, one of the, you know, main centers of the NBA universe, you know, for the end of last decade, you know, they both found themselves in the same situation. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about. We're going to go back 2 years ago. If you've been watching The Last Dance, you know, with how it likes to jump back and forth. Well, we're going to go back 2 years ago to talk about how it's highly impacted now for the Grizzlies. And, you know, it's May 12th, 2020, Chris, and taking us back to May 12th, 2018, with the lottery 3 days away. Now, I don't know what you were doing at that time. Were you covering the Grizzlies for Forbes at that time? Forgive me for not knowing that out the
top. No, I wasn't. This is like a this year thing. To be honest, like I know what I was like doing work wise at the time. Everything else is just like it feels like it wasn't real.
Well, I'll be completely honest with you. I was very excited. I was hoping that things would work out from a Grizzlies fan perspective. Once the calendar turned to 2018, you were really looking forward to the draft. That's what you were looking forward to, and it was a race to land the odds. And the Grizzlies landed the second best odds. So we're talking, you know, going back 2 years, 3 days away from the draft, looking at the second best odds. Obviously, Luka staring us in the face, and you know, just really, really excited about that perspective. And then the day comes, the lottery comes, and we are announced fourth. Now, obviously, Chris, on our end, when we were looking at it, really last year's draft was not necessarily a top-heavy draft, but it was a very exciting draft because you, in my opinion, had five clear guys who were up there. Is that kind of how you viewed the draft from the Cavs' perspective? It was a tier of five and then the rest?
Yeah, when I'm looking at this, when I'm considering this draft, you know, there was a lot of guys they were linked to, you know, when they were slotted in or they ended up at eight, you know, it's a draft where they were kind of linked to Colin Sexton and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is kind of the two guys. But at the top of the draft, I just, from talking to the people that I know that knew basketball better than me, European basketball at the very least, like Luka was just number, by far and large, like number one. And I, to this day, think it's why it's insane that he went third. And I think everyone would agree that it's insane that he went third. And I, you know, if I'm Atlanta, like I wasn't sure about just because of the size, and but he's obviously become very, very transcendent. Luka was just so clearly the guy that if you could get him, I felt like it was like the franchise changing guy in that draft. And I think for every franchise that you feel that way, I think Dallas obviously is just the winner of this draft because they got Luka. Sacramento, Marv Magley might end up being fine, but it's just like you passed on Luka Doncic. Like, what are you doing? Every other guy is just to me. I think just thinking about Luka was the prize, and there's a lot of other really useful players and good players in this draft. It's Luka, and then everybody else for me. And I think even then, I think just from everything I'd read and come to understand about him, I was just like, this is the guy. And I think for me, other guys you're happy with, but I, especially in the top 5-6, but I think Luka just by far and away has to be the guy.
And that was the thing that was just so heartaching for the Grizzlies is that, you know, we had sit here, we had suffered, you know, we had lost, we still had Mike and Mark, but it was clear their time was, you know, their end with the Grizzlies was on the horizon. It was just, it was obvious that, you know, a new era was going to start. And what better way to start it, you know, with a clear superstar, one of the, you know, truly best talents to come out of Europe in a while. And it was there for the Grizzlies in theory. Obviously, it was DeAndre Ayton going to Arizona, or excuse me, to Phoenix, because he had been to Arizona, all those connections. But then the draft lottery happens and we don't get it. We get fourth. Now, there was still hope that Luka would fall because there had been talk about, you know, obviously Ayton going first, then Bagley, and then the Hawks were talking about going with Jaren Jackson Jr. And that, of course, would, you know, leave us with Luka. There was plenty of talk. There was no way that the Grizzlies were going to let Luka pass him. Well, then that night, we're sitting here waiting, hoping to see what happens. And then you start to hear the rumors. Hawks talking with Dallas about a trade. And, of course, the Grizzlies were right there. I remember I was at a local Memphis establishment when all this was going on, just frustrated as can be. But it just it makes you realize just how close the Grizzlies were to getting Luka. The odds were there. It didn't work out in our favor. One pick away, it didn't work in our favor. But what did work out in our favor was Jaren Jackson Jr. He fell to us, and despite it being a disappointing turn of events, it still was one of the better talents, in my opinion, the Grizzlies have ever drafted. Chris, if you go back a few years ago when you were looking at Jaren Jackson versus the rest of the class and how you thought that he would kind of come into the NBA, what were your thoughts? Did you feel that he truly was one of the top three or four talents in that class at the time?
So I can't say that I did because I'm not a huge, like, aside from, I'll say this, I don't know how you are, but I'm not like, I just end up watching way more NBA than college basketball. So what I do for my draft dives are just like, I will talk to the people that I know, that the great people on Twitter that do a ton of draft stuff. I'll read Draft Express or they're at ESPN now, but I'll do it the step in, read as much as I can. Jaren Jackson Jr. to me was the big that I did at the time. I think I felt most good about, even though I didn't really have like a ranking per se, because it just felt like he was going to be the most modern guy. And I felt like with like Ayton, he's come a long way, but like there's just like something about him when watching him play in college where I was like, this guy feels a little too old school. And everyone that I knew that like was like in love with basketball was like, there's Marvin Bagley can like do stuff, but he's not going to be like this ultra modern guy. When I watch Jaren and you watch the profile of him and you kind of understand what he is, this is like the most modern kind of big prospect you can get. And, you know, obviously that has blossomed more in year two, in his kind of first year in this more modern Mike Budenholzer-y offense under Taylor Jenkins. But, yeah, I mean, I think at the time, I think it was like, okay, I could have seen, you know, maybe going for Trey. I could have understood that. Obviously, Mike is still kind of around and a presence at that time, and there's some other considerations. But yeah, I think if you're looking at a building block that's not Luka, you know, I think he, I mean, I don't know how you feel about this. I think if you're looking at guys you would feel comfortable kind of putting into your team out of this draft, that's kind of your main, one of your main pillars. Is he number three behind Luka and then Trey? And then is it him? I mean, you could make an argument for Ayton. I think probably you could. I mean, some people love Michael Porter Jr. Shea's obviously really, really skilled and does a lot of really good stuff. But I, to me, he's probably the third guy you feel the best about now looking back. Like, I think I feel sure now that he's definitely a top three, if not maybe fourth, the lowest guy out of this draft.
Agreed. I think that right now you would look at Jaren as being the fourth guy with Trey and Nate, you know, maybe even the third guy. You know, I think Aiton's still up there. But, you know, the big thing about it was that when I was at a place called Neil's, Memphis Grizzlies fans will know the place. I was there with a buddy of mine. We were watching it. And I remember turning to my buddy and I was like, you know, when they started talking about the Luka Trey trade, I was just like, I just want us to take Trey at number four. He'll bring in attention. He'll completely thwart all these efforts. It'll be great. But, of course, we wound up taking Jaren. And it was a nice consolation prize. But I didn't like that feeling at the time. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back as we discuss the past 2 years and what if things were different.
Whether it be during the morning or during your workout routine, whenever you might choose to listen to us here at the Locked On Podcast Network, might I offer the suggestion of making your experience better by having a Built Bar? Built Bars are new protein bars that are highly tasteful, highly versatile, and highly beneficial. They're tasteful because they're not like your old protein bars. They're not a choy to get through to enjoy. The chocolate, whatever flavor you might like, it tastes just like a regular candy bar, but it offers the benefit of boosting your health. The versatility comes from your ability to have it anytime during the day. You can have it during your morning routine, before or after a workout, or as a daily snack. And the great thing about Built Bar is that it's not just limited to protein bars. If you go to BuiltBar.com, you can find an assortment of powdered packages that you can put in your water. My favorite is Fruit Punch. I've had it daily for the past week, and I enjoy it every time that I drink it. Also, if you go to BuiltBar.com right now, you can use the promo code LOCKEDON. That's the promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off your first order. Please make your day better by listening to us at the Locked On Podcast Network, and also by having a Built Bar.
Welcome back to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman, here with Chris Manning. Now, Chris, so we got Jaren Jackson Jr. in place, and we go through the 2018 season. You know, but looking back on the 18 draft, obviously, as I had mentioned, we were, you know, the obvious hope is that we could have landed Luka. And, you know, you talked about his potentially landing Trey. But at the end of the day, from an outsider's perspective at the time, looking at the Grizzlies, when you looked at Jaren Jackson Jr., you know, did you feel that when he was in Memphis, when he was picked by Memphis, did you feel that he truly could become the guy that he was the right person for the Grizzlies to kind of latch their wagon to at that time?
I loved at the time the narrative idea of him being the Marc Gasol successor, because you were going to have a guy that was going to come in, and if he's going to work out, like the way that he works out is that he's going to be this ultra great defensive player. Like, he's going to be the type of linchpin defensive player Marc Gasol was for so long on the grit and grind Grizzlies. That's like the kind of backbone you're hoping to get. And I think that there's something very appealing about that. And I think even, you know, basketball has very much changed since the heyday of grit and grind. It's like a well-being known fact at this point, but it's just like, if you can still have a guy that can be a big defensive impact and like be a big and be able to do all the stuff you need bigs to be able to do and be smart about it, like that's like a really, really good pick. And look, like I think there was reason to be skeptical of Trey. I think the size and the defensive stuff with him is like a very real knock on him. And, you know, we'll see where it kind of ultimately leads him once he has to play like good winning basketball, if his team's really going to make a leap at some point. But like, I don't think you have that worry with Jaren. You know, again, like it's not something I think I felt with at the time in terms of like knowing for sure. But I loved the idea of like, okay, you're going to bring in this guy. He only ends up playing a couple months with Mark, but you could soak up something from that. He can come in and kind of be the successor to Gasol and be like it. I think now when you look at getting Ja a year later, it's like I don't know if like Memphis people have come with like a good name for this yet, but it's the modern version of what you're hoping that this is the beginning of the modern version of grit and grind, like that it's something a little more spacey, flashy, dynamic, whatever you want to say. But I think Jaren is an essential part of that. And if you go, I mean, it just the, you know, obviously not getting Luka sucks, but if you go any other direction at four, I mean, like if you had said, if they had valued Mo Bamba over Jaren Jackson Jr., if they had gone with Trey, if they had gone with Wendell Carter, and all of those things, I think you could probably find mocks or analysis that would have said that's the right, maybe the considerable thing to do. If they do any other thing, the trajectory of the franchise is just, is frankly different.
It is. And that's the whole goal of this. You know, I personally, you know, without knowing a lot about Jaren, because I was, you know, looking forward to Luka potentially, you know, I was hoping we'd trade back and I was hoping we would take Wendell Carter, because that's the other thing about it, Chris, is that that's just how amazing it is with where Memphis is now versus where we were this time 2 years ago. We were looked at, you know, very unfavorably. You know, after the draft, there were players who were not, or the lottery, there were players who were not working out for us. Wendell Carter was the only one that was. I was hoping we'd trade back to Chicago's spot at seven and take Wendell Carter and pick up an extra pick. But, of course, we've got Jaren. So we go through the 2018 season. Yeah, we didn't get Luka, but Jaren clearly shows that he's a future part of it. We're lucky to have him. Now we get into the 2019 season. And, you know, leading up last year, leading up to where we knew that we were going to be going through another kind of rebuilding year. Yeah, we had a great start to the season. We got past the Marc Gasol trade just fine. You know, had a good offensive month in March, you know, clearly showing that a shift was going on. But the idea for March for the Grizzlies was conveying. If you remember, Chris, you know, or if you'd heard about it, of course, we had traded our pick in the 2019, 20, or 21 draft, depending on how things fell, to the Celtics for Jeff Green back in 2014. So now we're looking to convey, get this out of the way, don't have a pick in 2019. And now here we are 3 days before the 2019 NBA draft. Now, the Cavs are in the same position. So when you're looking at the lottery in 2019, Chris, from a Cavs perspective, another rebuilding team's perspective, what are your hopes on that night?
It's Luka or sorry, it's Zion or bust. Like,
okay,
you're I think everyone and their mother is hoping that they can get their hands on Zion Williamson. I will, like, wrongly admit, you can at me and, like, get in my mentions. I was very skeptical of the jaw, how effective he was going to be right away. I was obviously very, very wrong. That dude freaking rules. and I was especially unsure about if the Cavs end up – if they ended up at two in particular, to me, I was like, RJ Barrett's the obvious kind of go here because you already have Colin Sexton. I don't know how jaw and Colin kind of work together. They obviously went with a guard who I don't know how he fits long-term with Colin, so that's just, like, a problem they didn't avoid altogether. But, you know, I think with this lottery, it's just like you're hoping your team, the team you cover, the team you root for, whatever, like, is going to get Zion Williamson because that guy is just going to be transcendent. And I remember, like, thinking at the time, like, I didn't publish it, but I made, like, a list, and I looked it up before we started recording of, like, my power rankings of, like, the most fun outcomes for this. The Lakers were, like, not on there because, like, just him ending up, like, just any scenario where the Lakers get whatever is just, like, insane at that point. But, like, if you're looking at just something that would have been really interesting, John and Jaren would have been, like, a wild front court combo. Just, like, absolutely bruising, absolutely modern as all hell. What would have just been a really fascinating outcome for those two guys. And, Memphis getting that close is a really interesting thing. You know, obviously, I think if, like, you get Luka the year before, it's probably, like, this is probably less of a reality because he's just going to raise the quality of your team a level. But, you know, I think, like, if you're not going to get Luka and you're not going to get Zion, I feel like they came away as well as you possibly could have without kind of landing those two guys when you ultimately get into this draft.
And that was the thing. You know, there in hardly anybody's mind did we feel that there was an actual chance. You know, we were breaking down percentages here like crazy. I learned more about odds and bell curves and all that different stuff over the month before the lottery than I ever had before. But, yeah, you know, we were breaking down percentages and everything else, and then we come to landing Ja. So that's the main point that we're getting at. And, of course, the rest is history. But what if things were to be different? You know, what if we were to have gone a different route? Now, obviously, you know, if we're setting 100% scope here of 0% or the Grizzlies just absolutely they should end the franchise to 100%, they're, you know, championship contenders next year. Luka and Zion are there. Yeah, there's a disappointing point about being so close to Luka and so close to Zion. But Chris, you know, you talked about it. You know, landing Ja and Jaren was about the best outcome that possibly could have happened. But I'll ask you this question. Say for some reason we land Jaren and we don't convey the pick, or we convey the pick. We now have Mike Conley, who is out there and is on the last year of his deal, has made it clear he wants to go elsewhere. If we would have conveyed the pick last year, do you think the Grizzlies wind up trading Mike Conley?
It's an interesting question because there's probably less of a rush to do so, right? I mean, like if you know you're not getting his successor, it's like kind of harder to do it, and or at least like you're holding out a little bit longer to flip him at a different time, you know? I mean it's possible that if like you let's say like you take DeAndre Hunter, like you end up at four and you take DeAndre Hunter's kind of your pick and you go wing and you're like, okay, like we kind of need a. We need this floor general to kind of shepherd things. And you know, you have Tyus and you have, like, you have a guy that can do that, but you want Mike, like you want to keep Mike around. The value is probably still there to trade him because it's probably just better for everyone to move him while you still can. I mean, have you thought about it all? Like, I'm just curious from your perspective, like Mike Conley was really struggling this year in Utah for a large chunk of the season. What if that had happened and they hadn't traded him in Memphis? Like, what happens to his trade value then? Obviously, he's an expiring. He's, like, been one of the league's best guards for a long time, a very underrated player. But, you know, it's like they probably are better off trading him ultimately at the time regardless just because it was kind of the right time for those two sides to separate. And it's a little – and I find those things are a little cleaner when it's not in season. Like, I find if you can move the guy in the offseason, it's just a little cleaner for everyone involved. But, yeah, I mean, if you don't know you're getting Ja – and if I remember correctly, the signaling, like, the day they got the lottery, they got the number two pick, like, the signaling was there that they were going to take Ja. Like, it wasn't even, like, a question that makes a decision a lot less complicated if you're the Memphis brain trust.
Exactly. Within 48 hours, I think it was, I can't ever remember the draft analyst's name, but the Wasserman, I can't even remember his name, but the gentleman who does a lot of the his draft reports and the combine reports, within 48 hours of us getting the lottery pick, like the Grizzlies, it had come out, the Grizzlies were making it clear it was going to be Ja Morant as the pick. We're going to take one last break and then come back with Chris Manning for our last segment. We'll get into how the last 2 years and the Conley trade could have been different if the dominoes had not fallen into place.
Let me tell you about the most useful app on my phone. It's hard to find the time to sit down to read and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on personal development. This is an incredible app that solves this problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique, and it works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library from self-help, business, health to history books. Blinkist has the latest titles from the bestseller list, as well as all the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read but never had the time to do it. I like Blinkist because it's super easy. I use it when I'm driving in my car. I highly recommend going to Blinkist, Finding Tiger Woods by Jeff Benedict. I absolutely love this book. A huge recommendation. Go listen to it. You guys will love it. And guess what? It's super easy with Blinkist, and it won't take more than 15 minutes. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books. All the books you want, all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA, try it for free for 7 days, and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/NBA. Start your free 7-day trial. It's free. There's no reason not to do it. And on top of that, you'll also save 25% off, but only when you go to Blinkist.com/NBA.
Welcome back to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. So we're here, you know, we're here talking about, you know, the Grizzlies' last two drafts, just kind of going back through how they could have been different. How did we feel at the time about how the dominoes fell for the Grizzlies instead of what could have occurred? And Chris, you asked me at the end of the second segment, you know, How would I have felt if we would have held on to Conley and he had the year that he had? I was a big advocate, you know, for however many dozens or tens consider my voice worthwhile to listen to. I was a big advocate for trading Conley at the trade deadline for the exact reason that you mentioned. His injury history was a huge, huge deterrent that I felt would pop back up. And it kind of did. But he had the march that he had with Jonas Valanciunas here and the shooting that we had. Conley had one of the best offensive months in Grizzlies history. And I really think that that helps the franchise in having him in on a good note with the Grizzlies. So that they played their cards right and it worked out. But obviously, that's the whole thing to remember. That's why I feel like, you know, the draft lottery, May 15th, 2019, will become the most important night in the history of the Grizzlies franchise. Chris, do you feel that may be a bit of a stretch now, but could you see that happening the night that we landed the rights to draft Ja Morant? Could be the biggest night in the history of the Grizzlies franchise.
I think it's possible, just because if you think about where, let's say Memphis wins a title with Ja, one of my thoughts coming into the season was like, I think that the outcome for this is that Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to be the best player on Memphis, but Ja is going to be like the bigger star kind of thing, where like Ja is the leader. Jaren's best player. I think Ja's been the best guy this year. He's been the leader of that team. If they win a title, like, there's a good chance that Ja is, like, if not the engine, one of the main engines driving that. If that's like the outcome, or if they're like if they beat the levels that the Grit and Grind Grizzlies hit, I think Ja is going to be kind of the guy driving that. And that can't go understated. Like, if you want to compare it, let's compare it to the Cavs. The last couple of years, we've talked about it. Like, they've landed a couple of different guys and are kind of trucking along, but they're bad, and there's nowhere near the energy that you get from Ja versus like a Colin Sexton or whatever. When you think about like where you're going and you get the right guys at the right time, it rocket launches your franchise. Getting Ja was also hiring Taylor Jenkins, getting Brandon Clark, having Jaren Jackson there already, kind of having the right infrastructure in place, you're just putting your foot down on the gas pedal and going. So I don't think you're wrong. I mean, there's no way they're like the eighth seed in the Western Conference when the season ends if they don't get Ja Morant. No, it's like if they come away with RJ Barrett, DeAndre Hunter, Darius Garland, whomever, I don't think it's wrong to say that this team's not close to the playoffs. No, I mean, I don't know if you disagree, but I just can't imagine they are this good if they don't get Ja and are able to just hit the ground running with him.
Agreed completely. And that's the thing about it, is that, you know, I'll pose this question to you before we start, you know, before we really, you know, focus on the after effect of getting Ja and Jaren. You know, landing Jaren, you know, that wasn't that big of a surprise. That was the expected outcome, you know, with us not getting the second pick with the second best odds in 18. Ja came out of nowhere. Ja was this added gift, just this. It's kind of like you're playing a video game and you're creating a franchise, and then you go into free agency where they've got these random names and you just land this guy who's just a stud. It was like one of those create a player video games that made their favorite team, your Grizzlies, out of nowhere. That's what it felt like. But so we get Morant. But that's the thing about it that I'll ask, Chris. When you think about it, with how close we were to potentially landing Zion, if we would have landed Zion, or say we would have finished third, and we would have obviously got RJ Barrett, I truly do think we hold on to Conley. But, Chris, I also think that if either one of those scenarios would have occurred, even landing Zion, I don't think that it's the better scenario. Because if you land Zion and keep Conley, like you said, we don't trade him. And he potentially runs into the injuries and you know, falls off the cliff, as they say, as he, you know, seems to have done a little bit this year. Do you agree with that? Do you feel that, you know, when you look at kind of how things have played out, that if the Grizzlies would have landed Zion, it actually would have been kind of a worse scenario for them than has played out for them with Ja?
Ooh, it's possible. I mean, I think certainly, like, Zion probably, like, let's just say the injury still happens. Like, you definitely don't have the same, it's a very different kind of rookie year. You know, I mean, I think like your NBA, your deep NBA fan has paid attention to how good the Grizzlies are, but like the casual fan kind of ends up coming later to Memphis just because like Ja takes off at a certain point. When it comes to the Zion, like there would have been this delay, there would have been this kind of like waiting and kind of whole issue with him kind of coming back, or like you don't know what it looks like, but the spectacle no matter what is there from day one in a way that wasn't going to be the case with Ja, just because Zion is like this megawatt presence kind of no matter where it comes. There is, I would like to visit like Earth 2 or wherever, where it's where I do get to see Mike Conley throwing lobs to Zion, though. I would like that would just be dope. And I think that's like, if Mike is healthy, that's a really interesting start for Zion. But yeah, I mean, like as you said, the health concerns are a problem. It's probably in the best long-term issue of the franchise. Like, if you can get a first-round pick for an expiring Mike Conley, you do it. You know, like there's no hesitation. You just go ahead and do that. So, yeah, I think it's hard to know exactly because we need to see more from the guys. I mean, I think most people would say like Zion long-term is kind of the guy has made an incredible impact. But Ja, I think there's no question, has been the rookie of the year. And if he doesn't get the award, it's complete crap. But I think it's an interesting test case. I think it'd be interesting to see like where we end up with this, because I would personally say you'd probably would just want to have Zion, but it's just a different, like the Grizzlies are not what they are now if they take Zion, I would imagine. I think it's just like everything has kind of fallen into place to make this particular Grizzlies team really interesting. And they're obviously competing with Zion if the season is to resume after we get through this coronavirus thing. So yeah, I mean, I'm going to be thinking about the question you just asked me for a while now, because I just think that they're like Luka. I think like if Luka and Trey are the guys that are linked together from the last draft class, I think it's probably Ja and Zion are going to be the two megawatt stars from their draft class. And they're going to be, even if they're not compared directly necessarily, they're going to be linked for forever, I think, if these end up being the two guys from that draft.
And that's the thing about it. It's a complex question to answer if you just leave the question on Ja and Zion. Because I agree with you. Zion is the better player right now. He is making more of an impact. Long term, yeah, I think just in terms of natural talent, Zion is a higher ceiling talent than Ja. But injuries are going to be a part of it. But here's kind of the angle I'm looking at it as. If the Grizzlies draft Zion instead of Ja, they keep Conley, then you lose all of the benefits that the Grizzlies gained from the Conley trade because they don't trade him. Think about it. You don't trade Conley, you're likely not getting Brandon Clark. You don't have Kyle Korver to make money match to be able to get Josh Jackson and D'Anthony Melton. You don't have the ability to create the trade exception to be able to get Andre Iguodala in the first round pick from the Golden State Warriors.
Oh, that's a really, really good point. That's a really, really good point.
You don't have all that and then turn that into Justice Winslow and so on and so forth and so on. Now, let's make sure of something. The Grizzlies probably do other things if they hold on to Zion, if they draft Zion to support him and Conley and Jaren, and that's a phenomenal, you know, rebuild, you know, starting point itself. But that's the whole thing about it, and I think that may be kind of lost in the shuffle at the time, is that in this what-if scenario from the 2019 draft, yeah, landing Zion on the surface may have been the one thing that would have been better than landing Ja. But when you're talking about, because of landing Ja, we traded Conley and our front office aced every single move to literally create the depth behind Ja and Jaren that makes this one of the best young teams in the NBA and a playoff contender, you know, the first year it's together, that's where I think that the Ja scenario was the best one out there. And where I think if you think about it in a lot of different ways, you see more negatives in landing Zion than you do Ja because of what our front office has done, you know, with the Conley trade.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really compelling argument because now if you look at the roster, you have Ja Morant, you have Jaren Jackson Jr., you have Dylan Brooks, you have Brandon Clark, you have D'Anthony Melton, who I love. I absolutely love D'Anthony Melton. and you have this whole roster. I mean, you have Justice Winslow, who I know there's been some mixed – that trade got some mixed reactions, and it's going to be a while, I think, now until we kind of figure out what that looks like. But that's a really – it's a really interesting roster. It's a good roster, and it's already kind of built in the way you'd want. It seems like it was very built very quickly and very impressively, I would say, to kind of get the kind of players that Taylor Jenkins wants. It's the kind of guys that fit job, that fit Jaren Jackson, and it just that roster just really works. And yeah, you're probably not getting that with Zion. And also, like, this team has an identity. They have kind of a style of play and a DNA to their team in a way that if Zion Williamson comes in, and let's say like the injury still happens, and again, that I don't, you know, I the timeline of that is kind of off my head, but like the DNA of your team is different, and it is really hard to know if you can calculate what that DNA is if it's Zion instead of Ja. And you know, I also think now when you look at what Ja's meant, like, you know this better than me, just seeing Grizzlies Twitter, reading about the Grizzlies, just thinking about that franchise, Zion probably injects the same life, but there is just something now like inextricable with how much Ja has just juiced up that team in a way that is just, it just pop, like he just pops. That guy's already a star, and it's really fun to watch. He's really fun to watch. And once you've seen that, it's kind of hard to let that go. No, I mean, it's like once you've kind of fallen in love with a player, it's hard to like kind of walk back away from the rose colored kind of fun colored glasses. Once you've seen him just be amazing for a long stretch of time.
And that's the thing that I'll kind of end on. You know, we can talk about different what ifs, and on that 100% scale, I'd say the Grizzlies are about at 95, 96. And the other thing that makes it maybe a perfect 100 to me, Chris, is that the two guys that they got, I don't know if you could have found a better combination that embraces the city of Memphis. You know, Grizzlies fans have always kind of kept in the back of their mind, you know, what if we fall into another, you know, multi-year stretch where we're not winning? You know, Para's our owner. You know, what he's looking at as far as, you know, selling the team or with them being on the West Coast, what he's got in mind for the future. But we don't land these two guys. Do other personalities come in and embrace Memphis like these two guys have? And that's just the thing about it. Just, you know, with Penny being with the Tigers and now John Jaren being with the Grizzlies, you know, I don't think the Grizzlies fans could have asked for a better combination that really have, you know, invigorated the city and re-energized them, not only on court beyond expectations, but also off the court.
Yeah, I think that's right. And look, I mean, Ja is, again, I think he should be the runaway rookie of the year winner. He has the body of work. He has the competing, you know, he's been there competing right up for the playoff spot right away. Like he, again, like he's just frankly played more games and played at a very high level for a rookie. Making the jump from where he played in college to this is just like wildly impressive, you know? It's one of the, I think Ja is an interjection in the league. Like I'm a little out on the hyping up his missed dunks. I appreciate the audaciousness, but like, we don't need to like revisit missed dunks. There's only one missed dunk that I recognize. That's LeBron almost nuking Draymond Green in 2016. But Ja is unquestionably one of the most electric players in the league. The guy is must watch basketball. And like, I told this to Mark a long time ago when him and I podcasted, I was sold on Ja when he like bodied up Kyrie Irving like very early in the season and like blocked a Kyrie shot when they were playing the Nets, and it was like this really close game. Like the moment he did that at that point in his very young career, I bought all the Ja stock that I could. I love Ja, and yeah, I mean I think there is something just inextricably just so fun about that guy that, you know, he's going to, forever how long he can play the way he can, if he keeps getting better and reaches his full potential, like the guy's going to be there. I can't imagine as long as he's healthy and everything, the next decade, if he's in Memphis, I cannot imagine that he's not going to be the engine of like really, really fun basketball teams.
Agreed. And the thing that I'll say is this, is that at the end of the day, the one thing more than anything that I'm glad that the Grizzlies did not fall on is the one outcome I wanted no team to have to suffer. And as a Vols fan, it's this. It's the curse of drafting a point guard from Alabama and a point guard from Vanderbilt. You never want to see a tear.
Well, do you count Darius Garland as a Vanderbilt player when he played five games with at Vanderbilt? Does he count? I don't know if he counts, but yeah, you're not. It's a tough look. I mean, it's not look, I think the Cavs, if they could, they would take Memphis. I would say this. If the Cavs could take Memphis's situation and not, I mean, just Jaren Jackson Jr. alone went to Michigan State. That's like Dan Gilbert catnip, you know, like the guy, like, yeah. Loves Michigan State players, has famously like wanted to hire Tom Izzo for outrageous amounts of money for a long time. I think any day of the week, if you could tell Kobe Altman and Dan Gilbert that they could flip their situation with Memphis's, they do it 10 times out of 10. There's no question. They will never say that publicly, obviously, but like, I would guarantee you that they, if they could take what Memphis has right now and just, they get their coaches, they get the players, everything, they do it 10 times out of 10 because Memphis' situation is just so much better. And maybe the picking from the wrong SEC schools has something a little bit to do with it. Although I do not count Darius Garland as Vanderbilt because did he really play college basketball? Did he? I don't think he did.
Just a little bit of humor there. Now, all joking aside, Garland was my fourth target if the Grizzlies would have landed in the top four. If they would have, you know, missed on Zion Jaw and RJ Barrett, I was hoping they'd get Garland.
Let me ask you this. Would you have been comfortable with Memphis going in on like on a guy like Darius that just had, like, for me, it's like one of the concerns was that he just had not played in college, and watching him play this year, this is a guy that looks like he came basically kind of from high school because his body is just missed out on a year of development. I can't imagine that would have been like, I think he'd actually be a really good fit in what Taylor Jenkins wants to do. But like, I think knowing what you know now, like that, considering how much further back from Ja that he is, that couldn't have been fun. I don't think, even if you have Tyus as kind of like the placeholder or whatever, I can't imagine it would have been nearly as enjoyable. Even if he does work on times, just Ja was ready from day one.
No, not at all. The reason why that is because that's the thing about Memphis, is that we were so starving for positive attention. You know, the shroud that was the grit and grind era had finally been lifted up, and the cracks in the foundation that were Chris Wallace and his decisions were here. When he was let go finally, yes, it was a breath of fresh air, but we wanted something quickly to get past that, to move on. If we would have not landed Ja and we would have wound up not conveying the pick, which was what everybody had been preached was the best scenario, we would land in that fourth or fifth spot. Yeah, I would have wanted Darius Garland above anybody else because you kind of knew what DeAndre Hunter and Jarrett Culver and others were. But with Garland, it was, we knew we needed a point guard. He was a local product that you had kind of heard of, and he was an offensive guy. He had good offensive potential, which is the shift that the Grizzlies needed. So that's kind of why I wanted Garland. But the thing about it is with Ja, you knew you had that. With Garland, you were just pointing that out there. You were just putting those labels on him as a hope. And so that's the reason why I wanted Garland. So it wasn't really because I just foreshadowed something from watching him that made him seem to be clearly the fourth highest ceiling in this class. It was just that he fit a lot of narratives more than others did. And that's why I felt after Zion, Ja, and Barrett, he was the best idea if the Grizzlies wouldn't have landed Ja.
Yeah, I don't think that's wrong. And I think if you're looking at someone that like in a different world would have fit really interestingly, I do think he, again, I think what he profiles to be, if he can be healthy, is like a real interesting fit with, you know, with what Jenkins wants to do with Jaren. You know, Darius isn't the other thing that I would say that I really envy about covering Ja in particular is that like he will go on Twitter, for example, as we're recording this, he tweeted this a couple hours ago, but was like, I basically like very, he's very open about sort of what he wants. And I don't know if he's like that in his quotes all the time, but he's like that in his like sort of presence. I know nothing about Darius Garland. And there's something about like, even if we're never going to know the real, the exact reality of these players, because there is like just a wall up, there is something really cool that you feel like you have a vibe on what Ja is. And I think that makes him even more fun to root for and identify with. Like Darius Garland, I know nothing about him. Colin Sexton, all I know is that he's like a weirdo who just works out and loves basketball all the time. Like, doesn't really like have hobbies. Like, he just is in Atlanta pushing sleds up hills right now. I feel like Ja is just like, you know, you kind of know Ja. You kind of know what he's about, and there's something really cool about that.
And it's nice to have that in Memphis. I can tell you I don't know how well Colin Sexton would have been received here with his trash talking of Penny Sun during AAU days. And at the end of the day, you know, hey, what if is a fun scenario to discuss and you know, look back on, but it's a lot more fun to determine or to debate on what could have been when the reality is in your favor versus what could have been when it's not. So, Chris, as we wrap up the show, will you kind of let people know where they can find your work? I know that you are known in basketball circles. I knew your name. I read some of your work before you had come on with the Grizzlies, but just where can people find you, especially with Grizzlies fans, now that you know you're on their beat through Forbes?
Yeah, check out some Grizzly stuff at Forbes. I'm actually doing a Ja. I'm in the process of researching a Ja Rookie of the Year post that I'm going to hopefully finish up in the next couple of days and why he should kind of widely win it, kind of comp it to kind of a two-part thing, comparing it to the Zion and him race versus the Embiid Brogdon race. So if you're looking, be on the lookout for that in the next kind of 7 to 10 days. Fear the Sword, Lockdown Cavs podcast as well, doing What If Week over there, which is a little more title era focused, if that's kind of, if you want to revisit that era of Cavs and Warriors stuff. But yeah, check out that stuff there. And I'm on Twitter at CWMWrites.
Chris, can't thank you enough for joining us. If you'll stick around for just a few moments after, we'll talk a bit more. But again, for Sean Coleman, you can find the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Grizz. You can find me at StatsSAC, and you can find Mark King at King_producer.com. We will be joining you again. We'll be talking a little bit about last week's NBA Grizz draft later on this week. Also doing some Twitter polls about who had the best team, and just in general, talking about some more what-if scenarios here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.